Hey, everybody. I'm not usually here on Wednesday nights, so I'll try not to make too many mistakes. I believe we start with the verse. So let's do that. Let's see if I can remember how it goes. May the sacred presence of the one who said he would abide in his teachings be our guide. May we follow his glorious example and tread with unfaltering step this noble path until we too shall attain enlightenment. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Tonight I'm talking about the Avatamsaka Sutra, which is this one. I actually did this last year as well, actually 1 year ago, almost exactly. And this year I'm doing a different chapter, but there's some similarities between them. Let me talk about, I did some basic introduction to this sutra. I want to do Thomas, this is a translation by Thomas Cleary, and I want to read a couple paragraphs from his introduction just as a way of saying what this is. The flower ornament scripture called Avatamsaka in Sanskrit and Huayan in Chinese is one of the major texts of Buddhism, also referred to as the major scripture of inconceivable liberation. It is perhaps the richest and most grandiose of all Buddhist scriptures, held in high esteem by all schools of Buddhism that are concerned with universal liberation. Its incredible wealth of sensual imagery staggers the imagination and exercises an almost mesmeric effect on the mind as it conveys a wide range of teachings through its complex structure, its colorful symbolism, and its mnemonic concentration formulae. You can tell this guy's an academic. It is not known when or by whom this scripture was composed. It is thought to have issued from different hands in the Indian cultural sphere during the first and second centuries, Common Era, but it is written so as to embrace a broad spectrum of materials and resists rigid systematization. While standard figures and images from Indian mythology are certainly in evidence here, as in other Buddhist scriptures, it might be more appropriate to speak of its provenance in terms of Buddhist culture rather than Indian culture per se. The flower ornament scripture presents a compendium of Buddhist teachings. It could variously be said with a measure of truth in each case that these teachings are set forth in a system, in a plurality of systems, and without a system. The integrity of Buddhism as a whole, the specificity of application of its particular elements, and the interpenetration of these elements are fundamental points of orientation in the unfolding of the scripture. A couple of things to say about that. There's 39 chapters, which are referred to as books in this sutra. A key figure is Samantabhadra, referred to in this sutra as universal good, bodhisattva of great activity. All the names that Thomas Cleary uses in this sutra are translated. That is, they are all, you could understand them, they're all in English. So like universal good is one of those names, one of those translations. Now, one of the things about this sutra in particular, maybe all sutras, but certainly this one in particular, when I took the seminary class on this many years ago, Gyoku Ko was teaching it, and she insisted, and I think she is correct, that the best way to understand this sutra is to read it out loud. And it kind of aligns in my mind with something we've been talking about in the Zen Poets Society, which meets once a month and has really been a lot of fun for me. We talk about the difference between spoken word poetry and literary poetry, that it's a different experience if you hear it, and even more so if you read it out loud than if you just read it on the page. So this is not, I don't recommend picking this up and just trying to flip through it and read it, because it's, well, I mean, you know, as Thomas Cleary says, it's grandiose. It's kind of, I can't even describe it very well. We're going to experience it. So we're going to be doing that. We're going to be chanting a bunch of this. My first experience with this particular chapter was the first experience that I really got why this needed to happen this way. And I had it had a really big impact on me. And I thought, wow, this is, huh. I didn't have a lot of ways to talk about what it was, but it was pretty amazing to me. One of the other things I can say about, okay, so we're going to be doing Book Seven, which is the Names of the Buddha. And one other thing to mention in here is that this world in this time and place is called, he calls it in the scripture or in the sutra, the world of endurance. Now, there are lots of other worlds, but the world of endurance, which I think is a really accurate name for this world, I really do. So I've always liked that. But he's also then going to have some references to many other worlds. What else do I need to tell you? I think that might be a good start. So what I'm going to do, I've made copies of these, and we're going to start chanting them. And I've also made bookmarks, or actually the thing that you can use these for is to keep track of what line you're on, like that. So, a bunch for you guys and a bunch for you guys. And then we have these guys. I'm going to keep one or two for myself. Okay. Should have kept, well, that's fine. That's on page 270. This is actually a relatively short chapter or book, and what I have given you is the whole thing, which is kind of amazing. And I have enlarged it so that you can read it because it is kind of small. Oh, thank you. I think I will read from this rather than the book. All right, everybody get a copy? Thing here. All right. I will just mention before we get started that there is a group of people who are chanting the entire sutra over some years, half an hour at a time on Sundays after morning program over across the way in the office. So, especially if you find this kind of intriguing, you might think about joining that group. Once you don't have to come every time, and it's pretty informal in that way, but they have several copies over there that you can use. All right, so let's get started. At that time, the world-honored one had just attained true awakening in a forest sanctuary in the country of Magadha, sitting on a lotus-banked lion throne in the hall of universal light. He fulfilled ineffable enlightenment, forever cutting off mundane ideas of transmigration and extinction. Arriving at truth without form, he dwelt in the abode of Buddhahood, attained the equanimity of the enlightened, reached the state of immutability in the realm where there are no barriers, unhindered in action. He established the inconceivable, perceiving all in the past, present, and future. He was together with as many enlightening beings as atoms in the 10 Buddha fields, all of whom were qualified to attain Buddhahood in their next lifetime. They had all gathered here from different regions. They skillfully observed the realms of sentient beings, the realm of the elemental cosmos, the realm of extinction, the consequences of all actions, the processes of mental behavior, the meanings of all statements, the mundane and the transmundane, the compounded and the uncompounded, the past, the present, and the future. At that time, the enlightening beings formulated these thoughts. If the world-honored one looks upon us with compassion, may he, in accord with our inclinations, reveal to us the Buddha fields, the Buddha's abodes, the adornments of the Buddha fields, the nature of Buddhahood, the purity of Buddha lands, the teachings expounded by the Buddhas, the substances and natures of the Buddha lands, the powers and quality of the Buddha, the formulation of Buddha fields, the great enlightenment of the Buddhas. Just as the Buddhas of all worlds in the 10 directions, in order to develop all enlightening beings, to cause the family of the enlightened ones to continue uninterrupted, to rescue all sentient beings, to cause all living beings to be forever free from all afflictions, to comprehend all actions, to expound all truths, to clear away all defilements, and to forever cut through all webs of doubt, explain the enlightening beings, 10 abodes, 10 practices, 10 dedications, 10 treasuries, 10 stages, 10 vows, 10 concentrations, 10 powers, 10 peaks, and explain the sphere of Buddhahood, the mystic forces of Buddhas, the actions of Buddhas, the powers of Buddhas, the fearlessness of Buddhas, the meditations of Buddhas, the psychic abilities of Buddhas, the freedom of Buddhas, the non-obstruction of Buddhas, the sense faculties of Buddhas, the powers of animus and articulation of Buddhas, the knowledge and wisdom of Buddhas, and the transcendence of Buddhas. So also may the Buddha, the world-honored one, explain this for us. Then the Buddha, knowing what the enlightening beings were thinking, manifested mystic powers to them according to their particular types. When he had done that, there came from a world called Golden, whose Buddha was called Immutable Knowledge, which was to the east, past as many worlds as atoms in 10 Buddha fields, an enlightening being of that world named Manjushri, along with as many enlightening beings as atoms in 10 Buddha lands. When they arrived, they bowed, then produced lotus bank lion seats to the east and sat cross-legged on them. In the south, past as many worlds as atoms in 10 Buddha lands, was a world called Sublime Color, with a Buddha called Unhindered Knowledge. There was an enlightening being there named Chief of the Awakened, who, together with as many enlightening beings as atoms in 10 Buddha lands, came to the Buddha, bowed, and to the south, produced lots of lion seats and sat cross-legged on them. In the west, past as many worlds as atoms in 10 Buddha lands, was a world called Lotus Blossom Color, with a Buddha called Darkness Destroying Knowledge. There was an enlightening being there named Chief in Riches of Truth, who, along with many beings as atoms in the 10 Buddha lands, came to the Buddha, bowed, produced lotus bank lion seats to the west, and sat cross-legged on them. In the north, past as many worlds as atoms in 10 Buddha lands, was a world called Golden Flower Color, with a Buddha called Knowledge of Dignified Conduct. There was an enlightening being there named Chief of the Precious, who, with as many enlightening beings as atoms in 10 Buddha lands, came to the Buddha, bowed, produced lotus blank lion seats to the north, and sat cross-legged on them. In the northeast, past as many worlds as atoms in 10 Buddha lands, was a world called Blue Lotus Color, with a Buddha called Knowledge of Characteristics. There was an enlightening being there called Chief of the Virtuous, who, with as many enlightening beings as atoms in 10 Buddha lands, came to the Buddha, bowed, produced lotus bank lion seats to the northeast, and sat cross-legged on them. In the southeast, past as many worlds as atoms in 10 Buddha lands, was a world called gold color, with a Buddha called ultimate knowledge. There was an enlightening being there called Chief Envision, who, with as many enlightening beings as atoms in 10 Buddha, came to the Buddha, bowed, produced lotus bank lion seats to the southeast, and sat cross-legged on them. In the southwest, past as many worlds as atoms in the 10 Buddha lands, was a world called jewel color, with a Buddha called supreme knowledge. There was an enlightening being there called Chief and Effort, who, with as many enlightening beings as atoms in 10 Buddha lands, came to the Buddha, bowed, produced lotus bank lion seats to the southwest, and sat cross-legged on them. In the northwest, past as many worlds as atoms in 10 Buddha lands, was a world called diamond color, with a Buddha called independent knowledge. There was an enlightening being there called Chief in Doctrine, who, with as many enlightening beings as atoms in 10 Buddha lands, came to the Buddha, bowed, produced lotus bank lion seats to the northwest, and sat cross-legged on them. In the nadir, past as many worlds as atoms in 10 Buddha lands, was a world called crystal color, with a Buddha called pure knowledge. There was an enlightening being there called Chief in Knowledge, who, with as many enlightening beings as atoms in the 10 Buddha lands, came to the Buddha, bowed, produced lotus bank lion seats in the nadir, and sat cross-legged on them. In the zenith, past as many worlds as atoms in the 10 Buddha lands, was a world called equal color, with a Buddha called observing knowledge. There was an enlightening being there called Chief in Goodness, who, with as many enlightening beings as atoms in 10 Buddha lands, came to the Buddha, south and seats in the zenith, and sat cross-legged on them. Then the great enlightening being Manjushri, empowered by the Buddha, looked over all the congregations of enlightening beings and spoke these words. These enlightening beings are most rare, O children of the Buddhas. The Buddha's lands are inconceivable. The Buddha's abodes, the adornments of their fields, the nature of Buddhahood, the purity of Buddha lands, the teaching of the Buddhas, the manifestations of the Buddhas, the formation of the Buddha lands, and the complete perfect enlightenment of the Buddhas are all inconceivable. Why? Because all the Buddhas in all of the 10 directions know that the inclinations of sentient beings are not the same, and so they teach and train them according to their needs and capacities. The extent of this activity is equal to the realm of the space of the cosmos. Children of Buddhas, in the four quarters of this world, endurance, the Buddha with various bodies, names, forms, sizes, lifespans, situations, faculties, birthplaces, languages, and observations, causes all living beings to individually perceive and know differently. In these four quarters, the Buddha is sometimes called fulfiller of all aims, sometimes called the full moon, sometimes called the lion roarer, sometimes called Shakyamuni, sometimes called the seventh sage, sometimes called Vairochana, sometimes called Gotama, sometimes called the great mendicant, sometimes called the supreme, sometimes called the guide. There are 10,000 such names, individually letting beings know and see in various ways. East of this region is called good protection. There the Buddha may be called adamantine, or free, or possessor of knowledge and wisdom, or invincible, or king of sages, or non-contention, or capable leader, or joyful heart, or incomparable, or beyond philosophy. There are 10,000 such names, individually letting sentient beings know and see in various ways. South of this region is a world called difficult to endure. There the Buddha may be called the King of Gods, or Precious Name, or Undefiled, or Truth Teller, or Tamer, or Joyful, or Great Renown, or Giver of Aid, or Infinite, or Supreme. There are 10,000 such names, individually letting people know, see in various ways. West of this region is a world called Personal Wisdom. There the Buddha may be called the God of Waters, or Gladdening Sight, or Supreme Monarch, or Celestial Tamer, or Real True Wisdom, or Arrived at the Ultimate, or Joyous, or Objective Knowledge, or Done with All Tasks, or Abiding in Goodness. There are 10,000 such names, letting beings know and see in various ways. North of this region is a world called Lion of Existence. There the Buddha may be called Great Sage, or Ascetic, or World Honored One, or Supreme Field, or Omniscient, or Good Mind, or Pure, or Master of Universal Sound, or Supreme Giver, or Attained by Difficult Practice. There are 10,000 such names, individually letting beings know and see in various ways. Wisdom, or Rarely Appearing. There are 10,000 such names, letting beings know and see in various ways. Southeast of this region is a world called Joy and Happiness. There the Buddha may be called Ultimate Dignity, or Mass of Light Flames, or Universal Power. Liberation, or Inherently Secure, or Acting According to the Truth, or King of Pure Eyes, or Great Courage, or Energetic Power. There are 10,000 such names, causing beings to individually know and see in various ways, and so on. It goes on for another two pages. So it would be fun to read it all, but, time. So what I'd like you to do is to sit in silence for a couple of minutes. Put it down and bring your attention to this experience, to the body, the senses of the body, the feeling tone, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Notice what the mind is doing. Notice what's happening right here and right now. And then see if you can think of one word, not a phrase or a sentence, just one word that describes your experience. So now I'd like people to get into groups of three or four. I'll let you figure out how to form the groups. I think you can probably do that. And share your experience with each other. How did it land? What were you left with? Were there any names that stood out for you? Were there, what was your experience? Share that with each other. And we'll give you a couple of 10 minutes or so. And then we'll come back together to report out and discuss amongst ourselves. All right. So kind of finish up and come back together. All right. So what did you all come up with? I'm curious. I got to listen in on one group and I'm just curious to see if people had similar experiences or different experiences. So maybe we could start. Okay, yeah. I've got the microphone on. Use your thingy here, which I want to put mine on too. So if you're having trouble hearing, these guys are a game changer. I love them. I'm going to want it because I want to hear everybody. So, right. Maybe start over here and we'll have Thomas, right?
Yes.
Okay. Thomas could pass the microphone it to people who can report out something.
I think we all found interest in humor in various terms or phrases, and lack of comprehension in some of it because of chanting it, not actually doing it. I noted that I wondered if I was reading it versus saying it out loud, how long would it have taken me to realize that we're saying the same thing over and over again, or like that this theme between the directions, like it took me a while and I was like, oh, and then I just started laughing about it. Like it seems silly and in that sense, and curiosity about why is it an inclusivity to the path of enlightenment from different perspectives, or like why the 10 directions, why all these different fascinating names, and kind of a enjoyment in chanting it. Like it's hard to focus for that on chanting it, and then energy, getting some energy from it.
So pretty good energy. Okay. Maybe this group? That's a shy group. Okay.
We discussed a little bit about literal versus figurative truth in this, and we talked a bit about the idea of it struck me as being very mystical. And so we talked a little bit about the fact that mysticism is sort of this thread that runs through so many religions, and perhaps it's a way to experience something more directly than you can with a literal truth, such as through poetry or through music. It's a way of kind of expressing or experiencing the ineffable. And we also talked a little bit about some of the names and kind of the disparity between some of them, like the supreme versus one that was like the completer of tasks or something like that. We thought that was really interesting. Did I get it?
So just as with the first group, I was struggling with this. I was trying to understand it, and I can't chant and understand at the same time.
Well, that's sort of
And
the point, I think.
then it was explained to me that I shouldn't try,
Right.
and that we should just chant and kind of go with it. And then that helped a lot because I said, okay, I wasn't failing at this, except I shouldn't have been trying in the first place. But it seemed like, okay, I should just chant and go with the words and with whatever feelings that come up. But then I started to wonder, is that the way of all chanting? So before we meditate, we do a chanting on how to meditate, for example. And I actually came in early today to read the section on how to meditate so that when it came time to chant, I didn't have to think about it. I could just chant because that was the only time I had a chance to actually read it and understand it. So I wonder, is chanting just generally going through the words and not focusing too heavily on the meaning of what's being chanted?
For the most part, that's true. I'm curious about whether if what you read, did that change your experience of chanting it at all? Like you said, you'd read it first to understand it this time.
It did not.
Okay.
Yes. No.
All right.
Hey, no laughing down there. So no. It did not, but
Okay.
I think that was because then when I was chanting, well, maybe it did change it because I didn't try to understand it.
So you didn't worry about
I
it.
didn't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
I just went through and read all the words. I didn't spend any time trying to understand the words because I had gone through that already. So I guess, I'm sorry, it did change it because I stopped struggling.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Great. Okay.
So I don't know. I think I'm not the only one that had, I mean, I might've been the only one in our group that had this experience, and if someone wants to talk, they're more than welcome.
Yeah, no, I think this is part of why I like to do this kind of a thing. The Avatam Sakha is great for this because it's not so understandable, you know, and if you're trying to have a literal understanding of it, it's going to be tough going.
Mm. It was. So.
How about the group in the back?
I've been voluntold. Hello. Some of the words that were used in describing our experience were textured, familiar, inspiring, anxiety. I'm one of the folks who does the Avatam Sakha chanting on Sundays, quite a few of them. And I remember before starting like in the group, like I tried that, like just reading a little bit about it to get a sense of, like, what am I going to be chanting exactly? And I was like, what the heck is this? And then once we actually like got into chanting it, like the relationship to it like changed like pretty quickly. I was just like, oh, there's something about being in a group chanting it that really like just even though you're not cognitively really taking it in much, like something is coming in. It's really interesting that sort of way. Does anyone want to like say anything more?
My word was familiar. And what was familiar about it was both like, I've read quite a few sutras at this point, and the Mahayana ones tend to have a particular pattern that this one also has. The repetition of names is really familiar, both from other times that I have talked about the Avatam Sakha and from other sutras, but also the sense of familiarity around the Dharma arising. But as Thomas was talking just now, I also thought, oh, there's also a sense of familiarity in like the sense of chanting and the just like letting it wash through. Like when we do Dharanis on Saturdays or during Sesshin, like they don't, the sounds don't have meaning, and but they're still like meaningful. They still have something teaching happening. And so like, it's just really nice for me to let go of trying to understand and trust that it's doing something anyway.
Great. I just wanted to mention, because Christine was talking about how the repetition and there's a particular way of doing that. It was because it was originally oral transmission. So this was way before stuff started getting written down. So they do these like paragraphs that basically have the same structure, and they say a lot of the same words. So you have, here in the north, we did this, and then we set up lion seats in the north, and we did this. Now here we are, and you know, so it went through all of these different things and kind of had a familiar structure, and just changed some of the stuff in the middle, which made it easier to remember. And it kind of also made it a little bit easier for people to hear. So there actually was a reason for doing that. And sometimes that makes these older texts seem a little bit like annoying, you know, because we're not used to reading it that way, because we figure we can always go back and read it again and, you know, try to figure it out. And this was a way of being able to experience it, to get it without having to like decode everything immediately. So to say all that. Another group here. People kind of got out of their groups a little bit, but.
Okay. I'm already, yeah.
Ah, there
I'm
we are. Ready. Okay.
Yeah. So we, let's see. There were a couple folks that talked about this feeling of confusion. I think the mind trying to grasp on to meaning and quickly discovering that that was pretty challenging, if not impossible. There was also one of us talked about kind of just being struck by just how beautifully, you know, like what a this ode to the Buddha, the way he was described, all these beings, you know, talking about his abilities, his knowledge, his contributions, and that was very impactful. We talked a little bit about that one word prompt that you gave, Genko, mm-hmm. and endurance was the one that came up for me because mm-hmm. it felt, yeah, at least for the first half of it, I really felt kind of worn down by it a little bit, like physically uncomfortable. My jaw got really tight and my throat was dry, and yeah, it was uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But there was this experience that happened to me about halfway through where, I don't know, it was like the energy in the room kind of started to come together in a particular way, or like my mind kind of unclenched and just kind of let go a little more. But there was this like experience of like flow that started to come about halfway through. And while I was like trying to like understand less, it felt like more was penetrating. And there was just kind of this like opening feeling that occurred. So, yeah. Anything I missed? Okay, that was us. Let's talk.
Who else?
So I can say for me, I am very happy because this is like the first time that I've chanted where I've actually gotten something out of it and not just felt like exhausted and honestly in pain from my sore throat. And I think a part of it was just because from the moment I looked at that book to getting this paper, I was like, there is no way I will ever be able to understand this. This is just far too much. So I think just like the giving up from the start uh-huh. helped me uh-huh. be able to really focus on each word and not think about what I just said and not think about what I will say mm-hmm. and just follow exactly what I am saying.
Oh, interesting.
And I kind of felt like for me, it was nice that it was so repetitive because my mind could sink into those parts that I already knew and then come awake again at the new words. And all the new words were so positive and loving and things that I generally would never say, like, I don't know, world honored one, diamond color. Unhindered knowledge, just saying those words and kind of waking up to them was very, very enjoyable. So hopefully I'll be able to continue this the next time.
Cool.
That was my experience too. Any of y'all?
We got another group up here.
Y'all
went back to your places or something, but say we've got Vaughn over here. Okay, we're good. Great.
So very similar to as what she was just saying, I felt very the same way as I was reading it, trying to understand it at first, and I had to at some point just kind of learn to go with the flow. And I appreciate you mentioned that this was something it kind of comes out by saying it out loud mm-hmm. versus just, I think if I just sat and tried to read it, I would get bored with seeing yes. the same repetitive yes. phrases over and over.
Yeah.
But to be saying them out loud, like you said, your mind lighting up when you saw a new descriptive, mm-hmm. you know, new concept described, that was kind of enlightening.
Yeah.
A nice experience. You had asked us to think of a word after going through all of this. And I'll have to be honest, I couldn't think of a single word.
Okay.
My mind was kind of just melted uh-huh. okay. after all There's of this, right all of there. The very visual descriptions of everything in here and all the different things we saw. It was like, I couldn't just land on one word.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So well, that's kind of where it
I like the word melted. I think that kind of fits so. Pretty well. Yeah. Okay. And I think Don was saying maybe. Nope. Okay.
This is just coming up listening to this conversation, but hearing that this was an oral tradition mm-hmm. makes me curious about what it would be like to just receive hearing it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, was it chanted or was it told more in story form or with more, you know, dynamism? as it was passed along. And so just have a lot of curiosity coming up, and I don't know if there are answers to that, but
I don't know. There's something, there is a rhythm to it. And I think that's one of the things with an oral tradition is the repetition, and there has to be kind of a rhythm. And of course, this is a translation, so we don't know what it sounded like originally, but a lot of times I think they end up being pretty poetic and kind of easy to take in. But it does seem to be important to just simply allow it to come in and not get too tangled up in it. Anybody else? We've got time for maybe one or two more.
So I heard you say to just feel it, and try not to interpret the words. Maybe because it's in English, I just kept struggling with that.
Oh, I see.
I'm like, okay, so does West, do all of these words relate and somehow relate to West? And so the only way that I could calm myself down was to promise to make a flow chart after and say, okay, West has this. How does that differ? Or is it the same? So then I can relax into it.
Okay.
But that took a really long time.
Okay.
So anyway, I failed.
That's one way to do it. I mean, that's the fact is that we all take this in our own way and do our own thing with it.
Yeah, I love that too. I wanted to see that flow chart. For me, the word that came to mind was color. When we were going through the first part, the color, and then everything after it, I felt like I was just getting these like bursts of just like characters coming in, and like I wasn't retaining necessarily like what the last one was, but it was almost like actors coming on the stage and announcing themselves and all these bursts of colors, then going off, and then the next one coming in and just kind of letting that flow. So it was really nice. Ezra, I think you said fuzzy was yours, like a good fuzzy, like it was just comforting. So it was nice. I had a quick question though. I noticed 10 comes up a lot in this. So the number, but then also everybody had 10 names and 10 directions, et cetera. Is there any?
You counted.
Yeah. At one point I kept seeing it come up. So I kind of went like this.
Wow. Okay. Great.
Is there anything, or is it just lots of tens?
All the way through this. They have the 10 thises and the 10 thats, and it's like everything's in bunches of 10. Mm. And I don't know exactly what that's about, but that's
might just be the oral tradition, like you said, just easy to categorize. And thank you.
So we've got about a minute or two. I wanted to say one other thing that I heard Thomas say in the group, but he didn't talk about it, which was he kind of was saying, well, I want a cool name like that. That was one of my first feelings, is that I like that one, you know? And so that was definitely sort of part of the deal. Here, I'll give you the thing back. I have a cool name. My name is Mystery Light. Is that cool or what? You know, from my teacher. Yeah, yeah. That's what Genko means, Mystery Light. Yeah. So what was Mystery Light?
Mystery Light.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So you have the dark and you have the light. And I don't know, there's so many things about it that I love. So, yeah. Did you guys have anything? Or? Yeah. Okay, he already mentioned you. All right, so it looks to me like it is time for us to do Vespers. I have really appreciated how well you all just jumped into this and really participated. And I would encourage you to keep finding ways to work with the sutra if you can. Because I think, and then just to understand what chanting is about too. So keep at it, guys, and let's do Vespers.